Chavez returns to Venezuela.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in for Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez made a surprise return to his country today. Chavez has been in Cuba for more than 2 months receiving cancer treatment. During that time, the political situation in oil-rich Venezuela has become increasingly uncertain. Federico Barriga is an economist for the Economist Intelligence Unit. He joins me now. Good morning, Federico.
Good morning.
So tell me, what do you make of Chavez's return?
It isn't really clear what his true health state is at the moment, but at least he's managed to come back to Venezuela. And that sends an important signal, mainly to his supporters who are starting to get worried about the future of the leader and the future, obviously, of his movement. Now, combined with the pictures of Chavez that we saw, I think, on Friday, the government is also trying to sort of come clean at least a little bit on this criticism that the opposition particularly had, that there was no transparent on the state of Chavez and also on the state of the political affairs of the ruling party.
How did Chavez's absence affect the Venezuelan economy?
The problem that when Chavez is away is that he had, for the past 14 years, been a micromanager of basically everything. And his ministers weren't sure about how to take the economy forward. You have to remember that they had a double-digit fiscal deficit. Growth has started to slow, public spending has started to slow, and inflation started to tick up. So there had to be some sort of difficult macroeconomic decisions taken. And if his health deteriorates again, or if there's new elections coming up, well, all these decisions will have to be put on hold again, and that eventually will require even more adjustment measures and probably a tougher 2013 than was probably originally expected.
Federico Barriga is an economist for Latin America at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Federico, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a big week for the housing market. On Wednesday, we get housing starts and building permits. That will tell us how the market for home building is. Then on Thursday, we'll see existing home sales, which economists often use as a barometer for whether home buyers are starting to jump back into the market, not to mention how the overall economy is faring. Mitchell Hartman has that story.
So downstairs in this house, the formal dining room, appliances in the kitchen are stainless steel. They come with hickory cabinets.
Salesman Travis Hunter is showing a brand new house in Boise, Idaho. They're selling steadily in a section of subdivision that was just weeds and lonely streetlights after the housing bust.
The housing sector was a bright spot last year, and we'll see housing starts grow this year.
Economist Yelena Shulyeteva at BNP Paribas predicts housing starts dipped in January, though only because December was really warm and home builders jumped the gun. But aren't there still a lot of foreclosed homes for sale really cheap? So why build so many new ones? I ask Nicholas Retsinas at the Harvard Business School.
While there are many buyers, often investors at the low end of the market looking at foreclosures, for people in the middle of that market, buying a foreclosed property is still a stigma.
It's also confusing, dealing with banks and courts, pretty daunting for first-time home buyers. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
The dreaded Federal Budget Act, known as the sequester, is scheduled to fall on March 1st. Congress and the president can only avoid the sweeping spending cuts by coming up with a deficit reduction deal, and that doesn't seem likely. The sequester cuts would be felt across the country in places that might surprise you, like a science lab in Baltimore, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
Jennifer Eliseyev doesn't work anywhere near the marble halls of Congress. She's much more at home among tangles of test tubes and microscopes. She's a professor of biomedical engineering, and she's giving me a tour of her labs at the Johns Hopkins Medical Campus in Baltimore.
Well, then we're going to run to the microscope room, where we then can look to see, again, does this tissue really look like it's supposed to?
The tissue that Eliseyev is peering at is supposed to resemble knee cartilage. Her research focuses on regrowing body parts. She starts with cells she grows in the lab. Then they're attached to a sort of scaffolding that can be inserted into the body.
Just like you put scaffolding, construction workers will put scaffolding as a building is being built, and then they take the scaffolding down after it's finished.
Alyseev's scaffolding is designed to biodegrade when the body is finished with it. This is all pretty whiz-bang stuff. It doesn't come cheap, and about 75% of her funding comes from the National Institutes of Health and Defense Department, and those grants could be chopped as part of the across-the-board sequester cuts. Alyseev says the uncertainty of the sequester is wearing on the scientists in her lab.
You know, when there is that stress and the uncertainty, it does affect people's energy and excitement for building something.
Alyseev contemplates the consequences of the cuts, reductions in her staff of 25, slower, scaled-down research. She's frustrated, suffering from sequester stress. One way she copes, reassuring herself that Congress and the president would never let this happen.
Part of me sees it as a political game, and so I'm not fully certain how much of it will actually be executed, but I think it is a terrible game to play that will affect people's lives.
And could drive top scientists to other countries that would gladly fund their research. Alyseev says it's tempting. In fact, she's going to take a temporary break from Johns Hopkins for a short sabbatical in Switzerland. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, the Denver airport is dealing with an unusual problem. Bunnies. They've caused thousands of dollars worth of damage to parked cars by nibbling on the wiring under the cars. One proposed solution? Fox urine. It apparently spoils rabbits' appetites for car parts and probably everything else. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.